Welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where today I'm talking to award-winning marketer and author of the book Brand Breakthrough, Margie Agin. Now, we're talking about business-to-business influencer marketing, how it works, if it's worth it, and we also talk about socks as well, because everybody needs a really comfy pair of socks. We need a good pair of socks. Thanks for downloading. Now, we all know about business-to-consumer influencers. Most of them are found on Instagram selling other people's wares. But what about influencers within the business-to-business world? It's a very different animal altogether. Now, Margie talks us through the process of how to find influencers, how to keep them happy, how to work with them as partners to kind of achieve both parties' goals. Now, you can find Margie on LinkedIn, also on a website as well. Her book is called Brand Breakthrough, and it looks at the process of developing an authentic brand personality. The website is centerboard-marketing.com. Look, all the links to everything are in the show notes. Can I quickly mention before we start that Not Another Marketing Podcast is totally ad-free, and I'd love it if you could give the pod a quick shout on social media, give it a share, and also subscribe via your podcast app as well. Check out all the links in the show notes. Now, let's get on with it. The first thing I asked Margie was if social media influencers can be used successfully within the business-to-business world.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a bit of a different animal. I mean, you may not find them on Instagram. They may be on LinkedIn or other venues, but definitely it's becoming much more important in B2B. And, you know, I think whether you're in B2C or B2B, the fact is increasingly people don't trust brands, but they do trust recommendations from individuals, even if they don't know them, over brands or businesses. And that's true for both B2C and B2B. And word of mouth marketing is huge. And in fact, in B2B, the vast majority, over 90% of transactions, are at least influenced by word of mouth in some way. And here's why I think that is B2B purchases involve a lot of risk. They're more expensive. There's more decision makers. There's more eyes on you when you're making a decision. So it's harder to justify and harder to take on a new risk or a new vendor and or change from an existing vendor from the status quo. So it becomes even more important in B2B to build trust, especially if you're the new guy on the block or you're a challenger brand. So, you know, if a customer can say, oh, so-and-so, who I really respect, is connected to these guys, that reduces the risk and it makes it more likely that they'll at least welcome a meeting and attempt to change their status quo.
A lot of brands are trying to behave like people at the moment, aren't they? Which is quite painful to watch sometimes on social media. It's like, oh, will you stop doing that, please? But business to business is always... has always been business to people, really, hasn't it? You don't sell to a business, you sell to a person.
Right. So. At the end of the day, it's still people. There's still people making those decisions. There might be more of them, but they're not robots. I mean, we used to think that B2B decision makers were all about logic and no emotion, right? And we're really finding that that's not true, that they still have, even the idea of avoiding risk, right, is it partially an emotional decision. So you might get in the door for, you know, they might have all their logical reasons stacked up in an RFP, but at the end of the day, they still may choose your brand because they feel an affiliation and a connection to it. You know, it's funny you say that brands behaving like people. We kind of call that brand voice or brand personality. And I think if it's authentic, and it really truly reflects your company's culture and values, and if you can execute it consistently, so it doesn't feel like you're just, you know, putting lipstick on a pig, right? Yeah. If you feel like you really can live that, then that comes through, and that's not painful, like you were talking about. Yeah. What's painful is when somebody tries something for a little while and tries to be jokey on social media or, you know, does their homepage of their website, but then doesn't sort of have the depth to follow through.
Yeah, it can get a little bit painful, can't it? I think brands like Patagonia, North Face and that, which I've spoken about before on this podcast, they kind of like to do it well because they back it up with actual things and campaigns that they do as a company and as a whole, really, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And even some B2B brands. It's not only the domain, although it's easier in many ways to when you're a consumer brand, but a B2B company can also share a personality. I mean, look at Slack, for example, which has, right, just shot to the top of the must-have tools for tech companies and a lot of types of businesses. Their personality comes through with their colors, with their tone of voice, with the language they use in their automated communications. So they're finding a lot of ways, even as a B2B company, to express a personality.
That's a good example, Slack, because Slack is kind of like, it's a bit of a boring tool, really, isn't it? It's a communication tool at the end of the day. So how would it work with influencers if a company like that, if you've got a software product, or you've got maybe a business product, a widget or something that you sell, would you just give it to an influencer and say, there you go, have fun with it, tell everybody about it? How does it kind of work in a B2B world?
I think that there are reviewers. So you could certainly give a product to a technology reviewer and say, have a go at it and let us know what you think. So that's one avenue. Another is going through a content channel. And a lot of influencers in the B2B space, they themselves, that's their currency. They want to be thought of as thought leaders. They want to be known as experts in their space. And so one way to, instead, you're not paying them money necessarily to associate with your brand, but you're giving them value in exchange, in the sense that if you have them contribute to content, perhaps have them do a guest blog or a guest post or ask them for a quote, you're incorporating them as a thought leader and kind of raising their profile. You also might share and reshare and engage with their content, so that if they already have a public voice and they've been posting and sharing on social media or putting out reports or writing about the topic that you care very much about, if you can help to elevate, again, you're elevating their profile, then it becomes more of a two-way street, so that they see it more as a partnership relationship rather than just a one way where you're sort of paying them or giving them a product to have them shill it for you.
Yeah, I think, is there a difference between like an influencer, a micro-influencer, a brand ambassador? I mean, the market's a lot smaller. You're not going to find that Instagram influencer that's got like 15 million viewers and they show a handbag and you just sell out of handbags. It doesn't quite work like that in B2B, does it?
No, that's true. And B2B can get very niche-y, right? And so you might have, it might not matter if there's 10,000 or 100,000 followers. It might be 1,000 or 2,000, but if they are the right people that are in the right niche market that you care about, that's more important, because they're more engaged. These smaller groups sometimes tend to be much more engaged than a larger following, where typically in a huge following, most of the people aren't really doing anything and aren't really engaged to begin with. But in a smaller, tight-knit group, the influencer's voice has a lot more impact. And also they're more closely connected to what you might do as a brand. So, for example, if I was, say, a cybersecurity company, right? I wouldn't just look for an influencer that's really involved with technology in a broad sense. I would look for somebody that's really into cyber technology. And even within cyber or cybersecurity, you're going to find these little slices of different types of angles on the market. And it's ideal to try to find one that is really writing about the topic that is the closest to what your company focuses on and what you might write about and what your customers are reading about. So it's, in many ways, it's better to go niche than to go super broad.
Yeah, I think it's that word influence, isn't it? It's trying to connect with the people who influence the person who makes the buying decision.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'll ask ways to find influencers. I mean, if I'm talking to customers of a company that I work with, one of the questions I always ask is, what are you reading? Who are you following? Who do you listen to? You know, what sites do you go to? What communities are you part of? And you do find names pop up that, you know, you would not necessarily have thought of, might not have been on your radar. So I definitely talk to customers about, you know, whose opinion they care about. And they're not always in the social sphere. I mean, it's great if somebody has sort of a public voice and you can tell. There are many tools that can kind of give you a ranking of where people are posting or where they've been a guest author, or you know, how large is their following and are people sharing their content. So if they have some kind of public voice, you can kind of rank that and see how big a presence they have. But in B2B, you might find sort of these niche communities that are behind gates, like a Spiceworks or, you know, little media publications, or they could be, you know, they could be speakers at events and not necessarily, you know, in an online space.
Sure.
So there's a lot of different types of relationships in B2B, and in B2B also analysts have a huge impact on the market, the Gartners and the Forresters of the world. And, you know, they move markets with their quadrant and their peer reviews and all different types of, I would never call them a brand ambassador. You know, they're much more of an influencer because they try to stay unbiased and they, you know, review a broad range of the market. So that's a different type of B2B influencer that it's inevitably important to build relationships with.
Yeah. So is the brand ambassador more of basically just a fanboy, basically?
A fanboy. Yeah. The person, I'm picturing the person who, like, their entire office is decorated with your swag and they wear your t-shirt and your logo.
I don't get it, but, you know.
There are those people, there are those brands that just inspire you know, loyalty and connection. And it's great.
Evernote was always springs to mind, because I think when Evernote became really big, sort of like, I don't know, 2010 to say 2015, 16, that sort of a thing, you know, there were Evernote socks.
Right.
And they were really expensive and people wore the darn things.
It's funny. Socks actually is a huge swag that people give away at trade shows now, I guess. And now that we're all working from home, you really want some cozy socks. Also, there's brand ambassadors that are employees. And sometimes it's even part of somebody's job description. You know, they're tapped as the evangelist, or sometimes there's just somebody within your organization who also really likes to write or is involved in different kind of communities, or you know, they're an MVP or something, and part of their job as an MVP for Microsoft, they have to go to certain events and speak a certain number of times a year. So those types of people, finding them within an organization can be gold. And I would call them, I mean, they're a brand ambassador because you know that they're not unbiased, but they're also considered an expert, a subject matter expert. So when they talk and when they share information, they're not just talking about how great the brand is. You know, they're also talking about the trends in the market and what you should expect for the future and how you make decisions and things that actually provide value. And so just because you're a brand ambassador, it's not like you're wearing this belt and, you know, it, like in a B2C world, and you're showing how awesome it is and taking pictures of it. You're also really providing value to your audience and helping to educate them, so they feel like you're not just shilling the brand.
Yeah, I'm getting that image of the, I don't know whether you remember that episode of Friends where Joey was wearing all the Porsche gear. And it was like a Porsche had like thrown up on him. I'm just getting that impression of these brand ambassadors walking down dressed in slack gear from head to toe. So do influencers want paying?
There are some. There are some that you can pay. Typically, I have not paid influencers. You know, as I said, I think they get their value also from having their profile elevated. But there are ways that you could if you're allowed, they're certainly in some businesses and in government in particular, you're not allowed to even give them any kind of remuneration of any type, right? But if they are able to accept gifts, you can reward them in other ways. So, for example, I was at Blackboard a number of years ago, and we had a major event, a customer appreciation event every year called BB World. And we had thousands of customers and industry experts in the education technology industry that attended. So we handpicked some customers and some other influencers to basically to sit in the front row at the keynote and other sessions, and I believe paid for their ticket to attend the conference, right? So they got that value. But in exchange, they were asked to blog about their experience. We didn't tell them what to say, right? We just asked that they share. So, and they had special badges that, you know, denoted them as, you know, an ambassador. And they, you know, they were able to put something on their social media profile that kind of had this badge. So they felt like special people. They got a podium basically to share their thoughts, and they got a free ticket to the event. So that's, you know, that's one way to reward people. Another tactic I've had success with is customer awards programs. So it's an ed tech company I worked with that had an annual awards program. They select customers who do an amazing job, not just using their products, but achieving their goals, right? So things like, you know, retention or increasing graduation rates or closing the equity gap at their school, right? So they showcase the customers, they make a big deal out of their story. Again, kind of the badges and the awards and the trophies. And then in return, the customers share their stories, right? And they kind of develop that persona as a brand ambassador with the help of the brand.
So it's more working in partnership with somebody. Would a business promote what their influencers do and what their influencers create amongst their own channels?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, it's a two-way street, right? So, and you might even start that way before you go to somebody and introduce yourself and ask them to kind of work with you. Follow what they're doing, share what they're doing, comment on what they're doing, then you become noticed by them, but also you're showing that you're going to do your part in helping to elevate their brand.
So what's the best way to find influencers to work with? Where do we go out? Is there like a big influencer directory or something, or do we just have to do the hard yards?
There's a lot of different types of directories, and I've played with a lot of them. One I really like, BuzzSumo. It's more kind of a social listening tool, right? So you kind of can listen to what are the, you're reading about who is posting what where and right. What kind of reception it gets, right? So again, in B2B, you might be looking for a very specific topic or very specific media publications that you care about. So you can kind of type in, you know, this specific topic that is relevant, you believe is relevant to your audience, and then also something that you think you would want to sort of be known for, right? And that's who you want to associate yourself with. So there's tools like that. There's other tools like one I played with, it's called Tracker, which can really tell you how the influencers are connected to each other. So you might find one influencer that, you know, they look very niche, but it turns out that they're actually connected to these five other people. And those five other people are connected to, you know, these much larger groups, or they're sort of a little tribe of people that are talking about a certain topic. And so it's cool. You can actually map out an entire network of different influencers and see how they're connected to each other. It does take a little work because the tools are a little different. You know, the directories are different. You do have to sort of dig in and look at these people individually and say, are they really writing about what I care about? You know, are they somebody that I want to stand next to and, you know, feel like they would be a good representative of my company? And how engaged is their following? So there's a lot of different criteria that you can look at and to decide, you know, who prioritize. And then you can't pick, typically a company cannot pick, you know, dozens of people. You might start with five and you say, this is really my wish list of the people that I really want to be connected with, and kind of go in and do all you can, go all in and do all you can to try to build relationships with them.
It's interesting you mentioned about looking at the engagement and things. It always amuses me when you look at, say, a Twitter or Facebook account, and there's like 25,500 followers or something, but nobody's retweeting, nobody's replying, nobody's engaging. And you think to yourself, this could be something a little bit dodgy there, because, I mean, I don't have too many followers on Twitter. I'm not huge, but I would say probably over 50% of what I post gets some sort of a reaction. So it's a good signal, I think, isn't it, to look at that engagement level?
Yes, definitely. There could, and Twitter's done a, it keeps trying to sort of weed out the people that are, you know, fake accounts.
Yeah.
But there are people that have accounts that are not associated with actual people. And then even when there are associated with people, most people are lurkers, right?
Yeah.
And readers, and don't necessarily share or comment. But that, you know, again, it may be okay to find somebody that has a much smaller following, and you may find that that following is highly engaged.
So how do we keep our influencers happy and engaged with us? Do we need to keep communication quite frequent? Do we need to talk to them a lot?
Yeah, you just keep sending them socks every holiday.
Yes.
Now, I do think, you know, holiday presents.
Socks.
Socks, you know, company swag. Definitely appreciation, real authentic appreciation is very nice. You know, and again, that's why I think a smaller group might be easier to manage, so that you, if you pick the right people, right, then you may only need 5-10 people, and then you can kind of shower the love on them. So, you know, appreciation in terms of gifts, communication. And we talked a little bit about kind of giving them little assets like a badge or another graphic to include in their portfolio. But you can give them other things to just make their job easy, so they don't have to, they don't have to do the heavy lifting on their part. So, for example, I have a client where we, every time we create a piece of content, we also create, you know, 5 or 6 different sample social posts that might share the content, right? So you could put those, you could provide those even with graphics to your network of influencers, so they don't have to try to create something themselves, right? Their job is to respond and comment on what you've done, and here you've given them sort of like a pre-canned, preset, templated way to do that. So, and it's not to say that you want them all to parrot the party line, or that you want them to all say exactly the same thing, but you're just giving them a head start, right? You're sort of giving them 85% of the stuff that they need to then maybe add their own personalized thought on top of it, because they may be, they may be approached by dozens and dozens of companies just like yours, so you can't expect them to do all the heavy lifting. And, you know, there are tools that help you do that, so that you can kind of have like a almost a portal of different posts and different types of content that they can share, so that they don't have to go try to make it all up on their own.
Yeah, I think it's important you say about letting the influencers speak their mind in a way, because I had an experience quite a few years ago when I was approached by a pretty big company to become a brand ambassador. And I filled in a little form, I answered a few questions on their software, and they gave me a badge, and they gave me all sorts of other little bits and pieces that I could use on my website and use in training sessions and things like that. But then a couple of years later, they sent new terms and conditions that said I couldn't promote any of their competition at the same time. I couldn't say anything negative about their brand whatsoever, even if I thought that their business wasn't right for another business. Do you know what I mean? If their product wasn't right for another business. And that worried me a little bit. So I would, yeah, I would advise people to stay away from that type of control.
Yeah, I think that's a turnoff.
Yeah.
Yes. To be that sort of prescriptive. I think, you know, it's not like you're going on a commercial and you're saying, and they're saying, well, you can't do another commercial for my direct competitor. It's the value many times of an influencer is that you're supposedly an unbiased third party expert, right? So I would think if you really believe that the product is not something that you would recommend, then probably you're not going to sign up to be the influencer to begin with, right? But, you know, think of a customer referral program. If you, and which often happens offline and is just a, you know, a phone call. So you can't control everything that one of your customers might say to a prospective customer on the phone. The prospective customer asks, you know, what do you wish you knew? You know, or is there anything I really need to know about this company that you wish you knew before you started? You can't control what that customer is going to say. All you can do is your best job to give them a great experience. And the fact that they might include, you know, a couple of little negatives along the way just makes it more realistic and authentic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right there, yeah. It's been fascinating talking to you, Marge. I could talk to you for hours over this. Where can we find you? Where's your website? Where's all your social media bits? Where are you influencing others?
So, several ways. So, my website is centerboard-marketing.com. And that's the name of my company, Centerboard Marketing. I also have a book, which you can find on Amazon, that is called Brand Breakthrough. And there is also a page on my website that has some samples from the book and an activity guide that goes along with the book, which is in line with what we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, how to sort of build your own company's brand personality so that it's more authentic and sustainable and, you know, kind of goes beyond just a catchy tagline. So that page, if you're interested in a quick look at the book and the activity guide, is brand-breakthrough.com.
I'm writing all this down. We're going to put this in the show notes. Where are your social media bits?
Yep. The best place to find me is on LinkedIn. For my audience, that's the circle that we hang out in. So on LinkedIn, it's Margie Agin. And hopefully we can put that link in the show notes as well. So I'd be happy to connect with anybody that, heard the show and would like to talk more.
Fantastic. Margie, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks very much.
Thanks again to Margie for her time. Really enjoyed that chat. And now don't forget, all the links to Margie's book, the website, the LinkedIn profile, everything you need are in the show notes. If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love it if you could subscribe on your favourite podcast player. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, it's on Pocket Casts, everywhere. You find it everywhere. Just search for Not Another Marketing Podcast. Thanks for listening.